Welcome to Kin Folklore. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories. And this season, we are exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We are in Westeros.
Oh, yeah.
To cover House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
The pod's delight is what she is. And I am Paul. Our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because, you know what? We love fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we have covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, Lovecraft Country, and we have loved every moment of it. We're excited, ecstatic to dive into this larger canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and talk about the history of this expansive world.
This week, we'll be discussing the second episode of House of the Dragon, The Robe Prince, which aired on HBO this past Sunday. So if you haven't seen it, come on.
Go watch.
Go watch it.
Let's do it. Come on.
Come back after.
I mean, they shut down the internet the first episode. You gotta catch up. Come on. Keep it going.
We'll be discussing all the content of the show and some of the differences between the series and the book, but we will not be spoiling future events from the books.
Kinfolk, to elude the storm, you must sail into it or around it, but you must never await its coming, so we will be following the sage advice from the Rasta King himself and sailing directly into this adult content on this show. If you're here for sailors with killer cases of crabs, ouch, yikes, itchy over there, or how to whack power dynamics in the realm's hiring practices, you have come to the right place. Let's go!
So let's get into some important plot points from this episode. Mm-hmm. It's been about 6 months since the death of Queen Emma. And, you know, we messed up last week.
Yeah, we did. We really, really did.
We really messed up. On this podcast, when a character we care about dies.
Yeah.
Only the characters we care about.
I mean, yeah, we don't do anything for these other ones. The lames, like, you know, Zhao, like, he's dead to us.
Exactly. We have a tradition of pouring one out for the character. And so last week, we were so hyped, we completely forgot to pour one out.
We lost her and we were in our fields.
Yeah, we were going through a lot of things. We forgot to pour one out for Queen Emma. So let's take a moment to do that now.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Come on, low liquor! Don't let the gin get like that, y'all.
You're only with us for one episode, but such an impact.
Huge impact. On this episode, too.
That's true. So, things are getting kind of awkward on the small council. Corlys comes in on fire. And demands that, actually, let me rephrase that, because on fire in this show could mean he's legit on fire. I mean that figuratively.
I'm gonna mash up my
he's
ships.
Not...
yes, it...
he's not literally on fire, but he's pretty
upset
because one of his ships has been taken by the pirate/crab feeder. On the Stepstones, and he demands that the king take some action about it. Rhaenyra oversteps by suggesting that the king send dragon riders.
I mean, but does she though? I mean, does she really though? I mean, the king is like, I've sent an envoy. Come on, man. What is going on with this guy? We're going to get to Viserys, but Jesus, do something, bro. Like, they're just like, they're wrecking you from every direction.
I like how her instinct is to send dragons. I'm with you, girl.
Yeah.
Use them or lose them.
Corlys says it right. Like, I mean, at least the princess has a plan. Like, he's talked policy multiple times, and all they've talked about is palace intrigue.
It's true. As a distraction, Rhaenyra is given the responsibility of choosing a new member of the Kingsguard to protect her and her father. She chooses Sir Criston Cole.
All right, I really want to talk about the hiring practices here. I really want to talk about whether or not they need to get the queen to be the heir to the Iron Throne, some, you know, power dynamics training, unconscious bias. She straight dunks on the guy who looks like the accountant from the Bravosi Bank. And she just hires this guy because he's hot and he has like battle experience.
Okay. Okay. Yes, he is hot, but you know, she wanted someone with actual battle experience.
Oh, but she leads off, "Be welcome, Kristen. Be welcome, Sir Kristen." Welcome to what exactly, Rhaenyra? Welcome. What kind of welcoming is this? What are we welcoming into? The court? Her bedchamber?
I don't have any problem with what she said. Or
nah, I don't either.
I also would have hired Sir Kristen.
Yeah, me too.
These other people, oh, I caught a poacher. Okay, great.
Is there anybody here? That was a great line. Is there anybody here that has actually been in battle and not with poachers? Like anybody? Oh, God, so good.
So she chooses Sir Kristen Cole because of his battle experience. I'm going with that. Let's get into the sentence.
Yeah, that's why.
The Valyrians make a play and they offer up their 12-year-old daughter, Lady Lena, to the king as a potential queen. But the king and myself find the notion of marrying a child distasteful.
The whole pod finds this distasteful. And I just want to be clear, in the books, this is not how this goes. A maester suggests this, and then in passing, and the king kind of hand waves and is like, no, we're not doing that. So this was not Corlys does not do this in the books, but it is an interesting change into why they did this. Which leads us to another interesting thing happening in the realm. It's an emergency session of the small council. It's called, while, you know, Viserys and Alicent are having a little dinner, you know, talking about the realm and about, you know,
they just talk about history. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to
just
see here.
Just talking about history.
Yeah.
Two like-minded individuals, one of them the father of the other's best friend, just talking about history.
Yes. And also the fact that he needs to get married and they're making him get married. And she's like, well, did they talk about any people? And he said, well, they want me to marry, like, you know, Lady Lena. And she's like, oh, fine choice. And, you know, it's just a little small talk. I'm sure she'll enjoy your company as I have, my Grace. You put that little "as I have" in there. Okay. Anyway, so her dad walks in. He's like, I think you need to hear this straight from the horse's mouth, because it just look like I'm throwing shade because I am a snitch. Everyone knows. Everyone knows. Everyone knows that I'm out here snitching. 1-800, go tell that. Like, that's who I am. So he comes in, doesn't even acknowledge his daughter's presence, really, and just talks to the king. So they go in and they find out from the Dragon Keepers, a Dragon Keeper, that Daemon Targaryen has stolen an egg from the Dragon Pit for his soon-to-be child and has announced his wedding to Meseria. Who's Meseria? Corlys asks the relevant questions all the time. So who is this Meseria all of a sudden that Daemon wants to marry? Oh, he's Daemon's whore. Like, I mean, listen, calm down. This is a little angsty, Otto. So the King's Guard then is sent because the king is like, I want to go. Sam's a dragon. He doesn't have a fucking dragon. I don't know why he's going anywhere. So Otto's like, listen, it's too dangerous. I should go. And they send a detachment of the King's Guard and they go to Dragonstone, and things escalate super, super quickly.
Well, I don't know. Maybe because Otto showed up and was like, give back the egg and blah, 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 you're whore. I mean,
yeah, this is what I'm saying.
There was no diplomacy whatsoever. I don't know. Could they have sent the man a letter and been like, please return the egg? Like, I don't know.
And they come up there with big, like Kristen Cole's talking shit. Like, it's like they have their starting five and he's all like, maybe remember when I knocked.
He did call him Sir Crispin.
Yeah, he called him Sir Crispin. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Oh, yeah, maybe you remember me knocking you off the horse. You know what?
It was good stuff. I appreciated all the trash talk.
I do too, but you got a 22 and they got like a fully automatic weapon. It's like crazy. Like the freaking bloodworm comes around the corner and it's like, this is going to be a bad look for them. And he even knows it. Otto, who loves to show up Daemon, is like, how about you guys sheathe your swords? Put that shit away, okay? Like, this is not going to be the way this goes. And to their dismay, but possibly thank God that she did, Rhaenyra appears and talks to her uncle. Shortly after, Rhaenyra gives her approval in an argument. It calms down, and Rhaenyra makes good points to calm her father down, and she gives her approval for him to take a new wife. Viserys announces in the next morning small council meeting, he's been thinking about this deeply. You know, I know that the most powerful house other than my own has offered to like join our lines. They've been a vassal house forever. We had relationships that span all the way back. I mean, the head of this house is named after the first Kingsguard who like protected my descendant, my ancestor, Aegon the Conqueror. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to join our houses. I am going to do the thing that nobody saw coming, and I'm going to marry Alicent Hightower, who's been spending a lot of time with me, consequently, in my bedchambers, you know, like even checked up on me while all the fellas were going over to Dragonstone. This both surprises and angers Rhaenyra and Corlys, rightfully so, I think. Corlys turns his anger into action, and he enlists another injured party, Prince Daemon Targaryen. He offers him the chance to make his name for himself as a second son in a war for the Stepstones. A lot happening.
A lot to unpack here. A lot to unpack. Yeah. So let's talk about the marriage first.
Yeah, I mean, I think, okay, there's a lot of things that we can say. But I think this, like, we both agree, and we've talked offline about this, that the kind of the theme of this thing is kind of, like, people not being able, like, people's search for approval and Viserys' blindness and being able to see. Like, he's unable to see what's going on around him. With that being said, there were a lot of options here for him that were out there for him in these conversations around being married that he just totally doesn't think about. Let's go through some of them, right? Let's just talk about some of the options that he had at his disposal if Corlys and Rhaenys come to him with this proposal.
First off, let's just name what happened here. It was one of the most uncomfortable things I've ever seen on HBO, and that's saying a lot. Yeah. To see a supposed 12-year-old girl who actually looks younger to me being courted by a man who is clearly at least in his 50s. Very uncomfortable. For that like 5-minute scene, which actually is a scene full of lots of other information, I was crawling out of my skin. I could not stand it. So I get it. I understand that he doesn't want to do this. But how about you offer the Valyrians something else? How about, I have a teenage daughter. You have a teenage son. Why not join our houses that way?
Yeah. That was a very, very, very Robert Baratheon of you. Very, very Robert Baratheon of you. That was a Bobby B. You dropping Bobby B bars. I have a son. You have a daughter. We'll join our houses.
Gods, I was young.
It's good.
But seriously, like, I don't, like, their son is also in the line of succession.
Yeah. Actually has a stronger claim to the throne.
Yes. Forgetting that. But, like, I don't understand why he didn't counter with that. Like, you just named Rhaenyra as the heir. The best way to neutralize this family is to name their son as her future husband.
Well, I think it may have been because Corlys leads off with the scouting report of his reign. Like, he was like, can I speak freely, Your Grace? I mean, I always want people in my council to tell me what's going on. Okay, well, now that we've established that, you're kind of letting your brother run you over. We got a threat over in the seas. We got a woman sitting on the throne, like, with the subtext of that being that my son actually has a stronger claim. The realm is pretty fucking vulnerable. And instead of hearing that, honestly, he hears that as repudiation. Like, that was an honest fucking take. The scouting report is, you're not looking good out here, my dude. Like, you got to do something.
Yeah, I think Rhaenys and Corlys are accurately diagnosing the beginning of a problem.
Yeah.
You know, the realm is in relative peace, so fine. But there's all these little things that are nipping at his reputation, including his brother, literally taking a castle and just being like, okay, I live here now.
Yeah.
Which is just wild.
Yeah. Crazy.
So I understand Viserys feels like a little under attack by this, but I don't understand why there was no counteroffer.
Very strange that he wouldn't have counteroffered, even to like figure out how to link them up with somebody else of prominence in the realm, another house. It would have made sense, like, you know, to maybe even offer, you know, just I just think there would have been, there should have been an offer made. Like, I agree. I think the best offer is let's marry Rhaenyra to Lenor. Like, that's the best offer. That's the best counteroffer without a question. But a secondary offer would have been another house in the realm that's of high standing, right? To say, hey, I mean, I'm not ready. But let me ask you a question, though. Let's go another route. Let's say, because I personally, I hate to even say that in the books, George does write, because we were talking about this, that it was that she was 12 and a maester suggested that he take her as a wife. In the show, they've adapted it. There's some random maester telling him that probably wouldn't have been a great thing. So let's just have Corlys do it. I'm going to make the case for Viserys being crazy here. And that I think there was, even though I don't want to see anybody marry a 12-year-old, marrying this kid and knowing that you're not going to have to deal with anything that has to deal with marriage related forever was probably an out for him. Like, he could have been like, listen, first of all, Viserys is aged up in the show. He's really only 29, 28, which is still crazy. But at that point, he could have just been like, okay, I'll get married to for political reasons, never have any sort of marital relationship until like this person's deep into adulthood. By then, I could be off the throne. Rhaenyra will be here. It won't even fucking matter. Everybody will be happy. Leave me alone. Like, if he's really that heartbroken about his wife. It is a play of which he never thinks about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, first of all, we have a model for that, right? Jaehaerys and Alyson were married for years before anything happened because she was probably around the same age.
Yeah, agreed.
So, I don't know. I think that, yes, the right political play was to marry this little girl. Of course, it makes everyone uncomfortable. I think it's gross.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Obviously, Viserys thought it was gross. The whole scene for me was like, I'm out on this until they kind of unpacked it in the next scene when Rhaenyra and Rhaenys are both like, yeah, this is screwed up.
Yeah.
Like, this shouldn't be happening, but it's the order of things.
I mean, Rhaenyra really calls Rhaenys out. She's like, hey, are you cool with this? Like, she's like, because she's trying to like, hey, you seem like really upset by this that there'll be another marriage. She's like, are you cool with this? But what Rhaenys is saying in this about the order of things, I think is, you know, let's talk about, I think this is a powerful conversation in my opinion, because it's not just about the order of things and the dynamic between the two of them. What I think Rhaenys is saying before we even see it at the end of the episode is she's kind of saying, hey, I mean, somebody's going to marry your dad. If we don't find a way to consolidate the power between our families, like the Targaryens and the Valyrians, like the blood of old Valyria, if we don't find that way, people are going to find a way to pull your dad, who I think Rhaenys has also established, what Daemon's established, is pretty weak and flappable. Like, he can go in any direction. And so he's not a dumb man. She says that. He's not unwise. He knows what's going on. So I think that this is a really pivotal conversation where she's like, I am seeing what they're doing on the small council. I'm seeing and hearing it from what my husband's saying, because like, I'm sure he's telling her what he's seeing. And this is the best play, more than you even understand, for you to not have a problem, because whether you like it or not, the next people are going to say you should not be queen, whether you like it or not, whoever gets in that position.
Yeah, I do think that's what Rhaenys was saying. But before we get to their conversation, I just want to talk about Viserys's other option, which the show does not even toy with, but was certainly there. how about you just announce to the realm that you're seeking a wife? Like, I'm sorry, do the Tyrells, the Martells, the Lannisters, the Starks, do they not have daughters? Like, I'm confused.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
You know, clearly he wouldn't want to marry into House Aaron again, because that would be super awkward. But, like I don't understand why that was never even an option here for him. I don't know.
I mean, he could marry back into House Aaron. That would have been strange. I mean, it's a little tense with House Aaron right now, because, like, both, like, Daemon and him were married into houses in the Vale. And, you know, one's wife is dead and the other one is estranged and living on Dragonstone. So it's probably a rough ask. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, listen, I would just avoid the Vale.
I just avoid the Vale altogether. It's really rough. Yeah. I mean, it's really rough over there.
But like, there were other options besides a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old.
Yeah, and it's fair.
The way that he approaches this is like, there's two girls on the entire planet. Yeah. And I'm like, this is absurd. I'm sure that the prince or princess of Dorne would have been open to an envoy discussing joining those houses. Like, it just makes more sense. But anyway, not to harp
on it. She showed up to the Great Council in the book. Like, Dorne sent a representative to the Great Council of 101. And it was the princess. So she showed up. Maybe she saw the goods and was like, I'm good. I'm all right. I'll just go back to Dorne.
Yeah. They didn't vote, but they were, they were there. But like, I don't know. They clearly care. So that's just my thing. This didn't have to be. I know that I agree that he had to remarry.
Yeah.
That's part of his job, right? To make sure there's an heir to the throne. And their line, his direct line, is a little weak. That said, they could have taken more than 5 minutes to consider this.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, even with all those things, the best political move, I am going to go with Lionel Strong here, who laid it out for him. Like, it couldn't have been laid out any better. Everybody gave him the same play. It's like, listen, bro, you got the richest guy who's bankrolling your regime, and also providing you with ships. He controls all of the seas. You control the air. You guys have the same bloodline, essentially. Just keep the peace. Because you may want to think about the fact that whether you like to admit it or not in these small council meetings, we're probably going to war in a hot minute. And you don't want to have dissension in your ranks. The best play politically is the match of the Valyrian house and the Targaryen house. All of that aside, that's the best play. And I think it's foreshadowed in the conversation, what's happening for him. And a lot of these conversations have foreshadowing with him and Laena and who she's asking about. Let's talk about that a little bit, because she's asking about Vhagar in the conversation. And
yeah, so Vhagar is a reference. So I just think it's interesting that the last 2 weeks, there's only been two episodes, but we've had two pretty overt references to Visenya, mm-hmm. Who was the sister wife of Aegon the Conqueror. You know, what did you call her? The stick in the mud Targaryen?
She was. She wasn't the life of the party. She was sticking in the mud Targaryen.
She was very stern and serious. Her brother and her, I think, had familial love, but not romantic mm-hmm. love at all. She fought alongside her brother and sister. Yes, Aegon also married his other sister. Mm-hmm. And Visenya is important in so many regards, because she's kind of a stand-in for like the badass woman warrior. Vhagar was her dragon. Vhagar is the second biggest dragon that we've known, I believe, only second to the Black Dread, and is still alive, as mm-hmm. Laena explained. But she's super important because she was a power player, and she's kind of messed up the succession to begin with, right? When she couldn't get her way, she did exactly what Cersei probably would have done and put her son on the throne, even though he was not next in line. And so she's kind of an interesting figure in that regard, but I just think it's remarkable that the show has now mentioned her multiple times or made reference to her multiple times in two episodes.
And what?
So I think there's definitely some foreshadowing there. Yeah. There's been a lot of discussion about like who is the Visenya of this house after what Viserys said on last week's episode, which was, we already have a Visenya. And so I think it's just, they're trying to use her role and her name to sort of give some foreshadowing for what we might see to come. But also, as you said, to highlight some of the drama that's been taking place in this family since the beginning, since the conquest. And Visenya, by the way, is both a Targaryen and a Valyrian, because her mother was a Valyrian. So
exactly. And that's what I think is pretty fascinating, that here is a conversation that if you know the history and you're watching, has a lot of subtext, because she's asking about, it's also giving you a little bit of Lyanna's psyche, right? Like Lyanna loves dragons, and we'll explore that more and more, as I think, as however the show goes. But so, of course, she's, you know, one of the reasons why Corlys was so excited about possibly being married to Rhaenys was also because he would control the seas and their children would soar the skies. So he knew that his wife and children were all dragon riders. He's the only person who's going to not a dragon rider in his family. And he assumed that his children would be, and they would have a direct line to the throne. All of that changed at the loss of her father, Aemon, him dying, and that all shifted. So here we are now with an opportunity to make all that right, bring them all back together. And the first question she's asking about is about Visenya, dragon. And to me, that really gives you kind of a context of who Lyanna is, about her interest in dragons, but also the bigger conversation, as you just said, about the fact that the Secession has really had a problem since that moment, since Visenya, Aegon the Conqueror, and Rhaenys the First, Rhaenys, were around. And that is something that's being kind of spoken to here. And it's also giving us the idea that, oh, wait, there's another dragon on the board that we haven't seen. I particularly like that both Vhagar and Dreamfire are mentioned in this episode.
So the Dreamfire reference is cool for a couple of things. One, it reminds us again of Dreamfire's previous writer, who was the princess Rhaena Targaryen, who was wife to both Maegar the Cruel and Aegon the Uncrowned, her brother and her uncle. Mm-hmm. It's not a great story for her. But she wasn't really a warrior, but she kind of used that like soft power that Sansa got really good at, which was she was a charmer. People really loved her. And the reason I think it's important that this is Dreamfire's egg that Daemon takes is because Daenerys Targaryen, her eggs, we believe, went missing from Dragonstone when Rhaena Targaryen was the princess of Dragonstone. Her friend slash lover, depending on who you ask, Alyssa Farman, took the eggs, stole them, and went off to Braavos with them. And we believe there were three eggs, and we believe that those three eggs are Daenerys's three eggs that later show up in Game of Thrones. Since Dreamfire was Rhaena's mount, it's not too much of a leap to think that maybe these three dragon eggs were also Dreamfire's eggs. And this egg that we're seeing now may be sibling to Drogon, Viserion, and Rhaegal. So I think that this was an interesting drop of a dragon name. Also, Dreamfire is still in the mix. She's still exactly laying eggs.
And Dreamfire being in the mix reminds you that when Rhaena was riding Dreamfire, Rhaena was married to Aegon the Uncrowned, And this is, you may remember if you've been listening to all the episodes, when we talked about the battle between Aegon the Uncrowned and Maegor, and Balerion the Black Dread kills his dragon and everything. She was, you know, her dragon was Dreamfire. Not big enough at that point, just kind of a young dragon at that point. But the reason why I think that's interesting is because this is another connection to all these different things that we're talking about that we know about. The Maegor issues of succession that led to all these other things that ended the realm going through all the things they went through with Visenya and Vhagar and all of that. And then it's also a reference to Rhaena, whose lover took the eggs, and later in generations, we believe we would see again with Daenerys Targaryen. And so all of these little dragon eggs, not Easter eggs, are being planted in a way that I think is fairly interesting. And specifically in this moment, I think it's interesting just because of what it says about the people involved in this particular conflict that we find ourselves in now, that there is some clear historical precedent that they have the opportunity, like most times in life, to set right and to fix and to like kind of heal from like their lineage. And either they're blind to it, understanding it, or they're just being oblivious to it. And the fascinating part in the backdrop of all this to me is that they continuously are reminding us that Viserys is such a student of history. So he cannot be totally blind mm-hmm. to the history of these things. He knows what's in front of him when he's saying no to House Valyrian. He knows what's happening. He knows instantly what it means when it was Dreamfire's egg. On the surface, you could say he's just responding because it's the egg that was taken for the heir that he had that died, the heir for a day. But there's a deeper meaning, as we're discussing right now, about the fact that Dreamfire has given birth to a lot of the different dragons, and that there's a connection to these last time the eggs were lost. And this was a big sticking point for Jaehaerys. He was very upset about these three dragon eggs that were lost.
Yeah, he tried to recover the dragon eggs for a long time, and he couldn't recover them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's obviously how Daenerys got them. And maybe it was a good thing, right? Because they were the only dragon eggs left in the world. And so maybe it was a good thing that they were taken when they were taken, so that Daenerys could have them. I mean, good, depending on who you ask, if you're team Daenerys, but maybe bad for King's Landing in the long run. They reference these two queen consorts who both in their own right probably could have tried to get the throne and, you know, exercise their power in other ways. But I thought this was fascinating to reference both of those queens and their dragons.
Yeah, I do too. I really do too. Let's talk about dragons, and let's talk about maybe Dragonstone and the scene that happens at Dragonstone.
Absolutely wild scene.
It's a really wild scene.
I loved it. I thought it was great. But honestly, what was Otto thinking?
He seems to have forgotten that dragons exist, and definitely acted like Caraxes was just going to be like, sure, you guys can duel it out, and I'll just sit by. I mean, the bloodworm comes around, and man, they have captured the description of this dragon from the book so well. Like, it's really, really cool to see. But yeah, the Caraxes was not having it at all.
Here's my thing about Otto. He's so full of crap because on the one hand, he's like, Daemon is totally unhinged. He's like, Maegor, uh-huh. like, I cannot trust your grace to even be in his presence. Uh-huh. And then he's like, let me take a couple of guys to Dragonstone and demand this egg back after I call him all kinds of names. No, I'll survive. No problem. It will be fine. I mean, other Daemon is completely unhinged, or he's not. Yeah. And Maegor the Cruel would have been toast as soon as they landed.
There would have been no conversation. There would have been no conversation if he said Daemon could be another Maegor. Like Maegor, that would have been like mopped up super fast. Like that would have been it. He took pleasure in that. Like, oh, you're coming to Dragonstone.
Sir Crispin for sure.
Yeah, he would have been like, crisp. He would have been crisp without a question. Without a question.
It was just, I couldn't believe it. But I will say one thing that I thought was really, really dope about this scene was it, again, with the foreshadowing, it puts two dragons immediately up against each other in a way that was tense and foreboding. I mean, I don't think Rhaenyra went there for any reason other than to speak to her uncle.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that she was going to light him up, but certainly when she arrived on the dragon, I was like, no, what's going on? No. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
It definitely built that tension for the audience where you now have two dragons facing off, and that's what this whole thing is about. It's the Dance of the Dragons.
Yeah, and I found it interesting that Caraxes didn't seem at all to feel threatened, much as Daemon didn't feel threatened by Rhaenyra showing up.
Caraxes was like, "What up, Syrax?"
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was like, all right, cool. And I also thought that, yeah, I just thought in this scene, what I really loved, there was so much happening in this whole charade, so to speak, is that Daemon just wants his brother to see him. The same way Rhaenyra wants her father to see her. The same way that all of these people are saying, hey, look at what you have in front of you, like align our houses. And the fact that he's in the throne room talking to, you know, Lionel Strong, put a pin in that for later, while all of this is going on and this conversation is happening is really fascinating to me, because it shows, and that he's unaware of it. The fact that he's unaware of it is really fascinating because it shows how disconnected he is from his family at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're more connected in their desire for him to see what he's missing. And they find that in that moment on the bridge in each other. Like, she said, well, here I am. You know, like, you took a shot at my dad, but by taking up in my castle and, like, you know, taking the egg that I took from my brother, you're also taking a shot at me. And I thought you and me were cool. Like, I didn't realize that I was getting wrapped up into what happened between you and my dad. And Daemon has to take it back a little bit. He has to, like, think about, oh, wait, like, I do love this girl. I love Rhaenyra. Like, I have, like, it's even said that every time he went off on his journeys and trips, he would always come back with a gift for her. So he truly loves Rhaenyra, and Rhaenyra truly loves him. And this is that moment of recognition that he knows. She knows when she asked the question. I know maybe viewers didn't think that. When she's like, well, here I am, strike me down. She says that boldly because, you know, she knows that he's not going to do it. She has full faith that that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think he would have happily lit up Otto Hightower. But he's not going to go after his niece. Like, Daemon Targaryen loves his family.
Loves his family.
And even though he can be cruel and can be reckless, I don't think there was ever a threat to Viserys's life because he was the heir. And I don't think he has it in him to harm his niece. I just don't. So I think this whole, what a flex by Rhaenyra. Like, she really showed that she understood the situation better than these old men who were kind of poo-pooing her before.
And that's upsetting to me that they were doing that, because it kind of makes me feel like it's a shade of, it's foreshadowing for what we know they're to come. But it's also upsetting because I just feel like she doesn't, like, your dad just, and this is what I mean by him being blind and, like, her feeling not seen and looking and searching for his approval. See, your dad just freaking named you heir. Like, wouldn't it make sense to hear out what she's saying, to see what her thought process is and what kind of ruler she would be? Even if you got to pull her back some, or, like, think about, like, give her some latitude with this, because she's going to have to do it at some point. To just, you know, hand wave a lot of her ideas seems crazy to me.
Yeah, I was so angry at this because it was so gendered, right? Yeah. There's no way, if that conversation happened on Game of Thrones, that Robb Stark gets poo-pooed the way that she did. You know, like, he would have at least been heard out, mm-hmm. even if Ned ultimately decides he doesn't want to take his advice or doesn't agree. But, like, the way that they kind of all looked at her and were like, why are you even speaking? Just really highlighted how little respect they have for women. I do see, you know, Bobby be doing this to Joffrey. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, he's
like, you let this little girl unarm you.
I do see Bobby B being like, shut up, Joffrey. Yeah. Nobody asked you.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
But that said, I don't think that reaction would have been the same if she had been a boy, a teenage boy. They may have disagreed or argued with her or whatever, but they would have never just been like stunned into silence and then go find something else to do. You know, here's a task for you since you want to do something.
Yeah. And I think I agree. And I think like part of what happens when, you know, you don't recognize or see a person like in your life, you know, you don't like see this person's value, or maybe you just take it for granted, which is what I think Viserys is kind of doing. It's kind of taking it for granted is
He says so when he says, I forget how much you were alike. And he's talking about her mother. He like forgot who she was.
Yeah. And that's also painful because he also liked Emma for granted. Right. Like let's just keep trying to have these kids. It doesn't matter. Your health. OK, whatever. The fact that you've had to mourn like multiple like deaths of children, like we've had to do that. Oh, yeah. Let's just keep going. Because the realm needs an heir. And so there's a lot of like him not being aware. But I think this is happening around throughout the family, because I think that you see it also show up in Daemon. And not only that he had no awareness, and not only was he kind of like going at his brother, but he was going at his niece at the same time, and her heart and who she is, even though he cares for her, he's blind to that. He doesn't even think about that. And then he also doesn't think about Maseria. He doesn't think about the position he's putting her in as a person who doesn't have any standing in the court, doesn't have any standing in the realm. She clearly says, I didn't come to you so I could play this game of power and all this other stuff. I came here so I could be liberated. I wanted to have the feeling of knowing that I was liberated from fear. Like, I have no more reason to be afraid. Like, you would protect me. And he puts her at risk in this moment in a very big way.
For nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was extremely irresponsible. He seemed like a little kid, like a toddler who didn't get his way. And it was incredibly risky. So it was just nonsense. I couldn't believe that she actually... I actually thought she was pregnant, right? She is in the book. And so I thought that they were following the same script. The fact that he put her at risk like this just to provoke a reaction from King's Landing is shocking and shows how reckless he really can be, even when it's at his own detriment.
Yeah. I mean, and just for the listeners who have not read the book, in the book, this is one of the main ping points. We don't know if they'll do this in the show, that he sends that she loses the baby, and this causes an issue between him and Viserys. But there is no baby, and he's making this all up. And I think that's probably a good change, if as long as it stays, so that they can keep Daemon around. We talked about this offline. Like, in the book, it kind of goes on, like, why do we want Daemon to go all these different places? We want to keep him as a player on the board, near to King's Landing, on Dragonstone, you know, all these different things. So I think what they've done to kind of, like, avoid taking him off the board in the show is probably wise. But yeah, it is actually true in the books that she is pregnant. So
And it also just blunts the, you know, they've changed the timeline so drastically, it would blunt the impact of losing, you know, Balon and Emma.
Yeah.
If like there was just another situation like that so soon. So I think it was a good call. But I was stunned when Rhaenyra called him on this bluff, and Missandei had this look like, what did you tell them?
Yeah, exactly.
What do they think?
She knows her uncle so well.
But it was a great, It was such a great scene. I just, their conversation afterwards was great too. I will say this accent work coming from Masseria leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah,
I don't understand what she's doing with the accent.
She's trying to go a little French, but it's a little not French. And I don't know why she's doing it that way. But yeah, it's a little, it's.
Yeah, I'm not sure where she's supposed to be from.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to criticize it too much, but. Because Masseria is from Lys in the book, but she's clearly not from Lys. So I don't really understand what they're doing with the accent, but it's a little distracting. I had trouble. I understood her fine, but because the accent is so seems so out of place and so not real, I had trouble. I was a little distracted by it. I was like, why are we? Why is she doing that?
Here, you know what? But here's why I'm here for it. Because we know we're in Game of Thrones world when we're on accent watch. Like when there's like when there's like weird accents that you can't place and they may change over seasons, like multiple different ones, you know, all you can do is shout out Littlefinger and just know that, hey, you know what? This is we're back. We are back.
Yeah. Yeah, true, true. When you're on wig watch and accent watch,
yeah, you know exactly. That, you're like, you know, oh, you're wait, back in, that accent's in this weird. World. Where's that from?
Can we talk a little bit about the like the Allison Viserys Hightower situation?
Yeah.
Although Hightower, not Allison's name is also Hightower. This felt to me, obviously we knew this was coming. Everybody, I think everyone knew this was coming. It was pretty much outlined in the trailer. Mm-hmm. It still felt fast. Did it feel fast to you?
A lot of the pacing feels fast right now, and I think it's because they want to get to, not really fast. I don't want to say that because I go back and forth with that question because as I was sitting here rewatching the episode and as I was thinking about how much there is still to go, I like that they're consolidating some things because there's still mm-hmm. a lot of runway. I mean, we were talking about this the other night. You could go four seasons. They're probably going to do three, but you could go four seasons easily, like and keep it going if you moved at a slower pace. I don't think it felt fast. I felt like there's a lot of work. That part of it didn't feel fast to me. I feel like it could be the preview of next week's episode felt really fucking fast to me when I saw like we may get Aegon the Older. And I was like, already as a kid. I was like, wait, there's a toddler? What's happening? But how about you? You felt like it was a little fast for the development of the relationship?
Yeah, I thought honestly that I mean, I guess it makes sense in the way that the timeline works out, but I actually thought the marriage would take place when they do the big time jump. Mm. Because there are a couple reasons why it doesn't feel super comfortable. One is Allison and Rhaenyra are 15 in this time. I think 14 actually. Mm-hmm. And now she's 15, right? She was 14 last week and now she's 15. Okay, like developmentally, sure, there's a 3 years is a long time between 12 and 15, but 15 is still a child. So the fact that he wasn't willing to marry Lena, but wanted to marry Allison felt super uncomfortable to me when they just highlighted how young 12 is, right? In addition to that, I just felt like we could have seen one more scene of development where romantic feelings seem to be peeking through for him. I still got the sense that like he appreciated Allison's friendship and there were sure red flags there, like don't tell Rhaenyra about our little talks. Mm-hmm. That's totally grooming. Mm-hmm. Right, but I just didn't get the sense that it had there was a turn yet, and I think we're supposed to understand that that happened while Otto and Rhaenyra were on Dragonstone, right? Because the last thing Otto says to Allison before he leaves is go see the king tonight, and she's kind of unsure and says, well, if you want me to. So we have to assume she went.
Yeah.
So something happened that night because like legit the next day is when he makes the announcement. I feel like there was a little something missing and maybe there was a scene that was cut, But I would have liked to see maybe one more scene of them together where it becomes clear that he has those types of designs on her.
Yeah, I don't think he... I think, like, that's where we're getting... And I agree that there's some things that feel like... That I agree with. Like, we talked about that offline, too, of, like, there's some things that are happening off screen that we're like, something happened that we don't quite see where there's, like, some connective tissue missing. I'm hoping and holding out hope that there's a... That those things are going to show up later and they're intentionally omitted so that they can add to when they're revealed later. I think what I land at is when he's looking out of the window and the sound is kind of muted of the bustling of the small council, and there's a part of me, it's like he's reflecting not only on the choice he's about to make, but things that have happened in the past few days. And and so, yeah, it could have been something happened off screen with her going to go see him while they're all on Dragonstone. We do know that the king does go in and have a late night meeting with Lionel Strong. So there had to be either before that meeting. It had to be before that meeting they would have seen each other, because instantly after that meeting, somebody from the Kingsguard comes in and says that Rhaenyra's come back, and then he's like going to go meet with Rhaenyra, and he's like, what the hell did you do? So it probably would have been in that sweet spot of like while the meeting was happening, like you're saying. Let's be honest, in our world there's no to be clear, like in 2022, in the year of our Queen Beyonce, we know that like this is grooming. This is crazy. Like, she's 15 years old. In the book, it's kind of makes more sense because she's not 15 years old. So that's where we're, that's why I think the time jump is going to happen.
Yeah, they're both younger. She's 18. He's in his early 30s, I think.
Yeah.
She's older, rather, but he's younger.
Yeah.
So it's not nearly as creepy. Yeah,
so it's a little bit different. I really do sense, like, I was listening to an interview earlier with Emily Carey, who plays young Allison. And, she really has done some work about the character that was kind of off page, but by journaling and coming up with things. And one of the things that she worked with Patty Constantine on was they were kind of trying to strike this balance of exactly what we're talking about. What is this about, like, between the two of them in these scenes? Because there is this age difference. And one of the things that that kind of, like, they spoke about really in these moments were that he never really does feel those kind of romantic feelings. He's doing this as a way to avoid he has animus with the other fan, with Corlys, for whatever reason, whether that be insecurity, whether that be like just plain out, flat out, listen, I don't like the fact that he thinks he's on the same level as me and I'm still the king, whatever that may be, or the issues that happen at the Great Council, or the fact that Otto's been whispering in his ear, right? Like that, these things as well. So all those things are kind of happening as subtext. But the main thing is that they never, like, their bonding point, in my opinion, is through loss, through trauma, through the ability to understand what that loss means. And there's a place where Emily Carey talks about in her interview that she, for the first time through hanging out with Viserys, sees what it might have been like for her father to grieve, like her mother's loss. Not that she looks at Viserys as a father figure, but that she understands a different context, a different angle on the grieving. And I thought that, and he kind of is seeing that same thing. So it's kind of an interesting thing that he even chooses her. And I think it's surprising to her also in the Great Council room, because she's not reading it as if, oh, this is a romantic thing. She's reading it like, or like a political thing. She's reading it like, oh, we're two people who understand this great loss from different angles, and I'm here to be supportive and understand that. And it's kind of ambiguous the way she plays it, whether she understands her dad's design or not.
Oh, I think she gets it. I think So on second watch, I think she totally knew what was going to happen. I think they had discussed it. I think she gets that that's what her father wants her to do. I think what she's not sure about is whether her father, I think this is like an Anne Boleyn mm-hmm. situation. So Anne Boleyn's father famously set up both of his daughters with Henry VIII. And one was essentially Henry VIII's mistress and the other became queen. And I think that she isn't clear about what her father necessarily wants her to be. Is he, you know, essentially setting her up to comfort the king inappropriately, but nothing else? Or is he trying to make her queen? And so, but I think she gets what her dad is doing. I don't think Allison is naive. I think she totally gets it. I think she's just not comfortable with it. And she wants to make sure that that's what's, you know, being asked of her before she goes and does it, because it's like a big deal, right? Like, let's say that her and the king have sex.
Yeah.
That's huge for her. That could ruin her, right? So I think she was essentially saying, are we thinking the same thing here, Dad? Like, are we clear on what's being asked here? But I think she gets the overall, like, he's trying to use her to influence the king.
I think she even says to Rhaenyra in the sept scene, right? Like, don't, like, she says to the person who's going to be taking over ruling the whole entire Seven Kingdoms, don't worry about the politics or the affairs, I'm paraphrasing, of like, you know, the men of the court and the council. Like, why are you even thinking about that? So on some levels, she understands it, but she doesn't internalize it to the point, because she can't allow herself to internalize it, because it just would come out in other ways. I don't think that she fully believes. She understands that there's things that are moving around her and that her dad wants her to do certain things, but I don't think she fully connects to the full meaning of what that is the way that, you know, she could. And it's the naivete of being young. Like, I don't think like it's like she doesn't have any understanding because she's unintelligent. It's she doesn't have full understanding of the ramifications, even to her friendship on some levels.
I think you're mostly right. Like, I agree with you mostly. But I do think that there's an element here that has to do with ambition as well.
Because you think her ambition or Otto's ambition?
Her ambition. Hmm. Because what I can't square is her never mentioning any of their meetings to her friend for 6 months.
Before and more than her friend. Sorry? More than her friend. Like, they actually have confirmed multiple times that there's an ambiguity to the relationship. Not that they've crossed the line of it being intimate, but there's like this blurred line between platonic and romantic between her and Rhaenyra, because of just their closeness and how much they do together. And
yeah.
Yeah. So
I cannot square the fact that she didn't share these meetings with Rhaenyra before the king even told her not to, if she doesn't have her own game that she's playing at too.
Well,
so I'm just not willing to let Allison off the hook. I do think that she's a sympathetic character at this point. Like, I definitely felt for her when her father told her to go see the king. I was just like, wow, like, this guy can't even just like let her guard down and is like chastising her for picking at her nails. And like, I do think she's a sympathetic character, but I still think that she is an ambitious one, but maybe not in the same way that the other women in this story are ambitious. I don't think that necessarily Allison went into this thinking, I'm going to be queen, but she had an understanding that she could benefit from this arrangement too.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely has a moment, right? And there is this moment that I wanted to talk about in when he's going over the history of Valyria and talking about the, you know, the different aspects of Valyria and, you know, where people, like, where the nobles, you know, built their court and how things worked, and you know, that the Valyrian capital was built on a volcano, and that the dragon lords lived in the volcanic face. And he starts going into the closest source of their magic and their power, what, you know, and also what happens with like the blood mages working, doing their craft. Doesn't even talk about it as magic, just like the craft of like being a blood mage. Then she asks, do you think that Westeros could be another old Valyria? And he says, you know, the prowess of old Valyria will never be seen again, is essentially what he says. And in that moment, he drops the dragon statue and it breaks. And then they kind of have this moment where he touches her hand. It's kind of an awkward kind of like, oh, what's happening here moment. And that is the first time they have like an actual, like kind of physical touch in the on the screen. But it's also a symbolism in that, that like, I think like the fact that she's the one and he's the one having the conversation and the dragon breaks, that's a foreshadowing for what we see at the end mm-hmm. of the whole entire episode, where there's a break in the actual, you know, like he's calling after Rhaenyra. She leaves the throne. She leaves the small council room, and there's obviously going to be tension. And these choices actually set the tone for the dragon breaking.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. That moment was, full of symbolism. And I don't think that this is a spoiler, because I think there's going to be another time jump. So I'm just going to say it. When the word that this marriage was going to occur reached Daemon, he beat the hell out of the person who bought him the message. Like, yeah. Daemon is so upset by this marriage, because obviously it means it there will be more heirs, that he gets violent with the poor messenger who bought the message. And I think that's another instance of like the dragon breaking.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Another instance of this family becoming more fractured than it already is. We started with a fracture within the family. Rhaenys and Viserys are cousins. Note that Rhaenyra never calls Rhaenys. She calls her princess. These are not warm feelings between these two parts of the family. Mm-hmm. And now, because of this marriage, there's a greater fracture developing. And I think we're just going to see this season, I think, is all about that, those little fractures, those little cracks in the Targaryen facade, that the things are not, they're not as powerful as they could be because of their own hubris, their own pettiness, their inability to actually speak to each other. I mean, another big theme in this episode is that Rhaenyra and Viserys apparently have barely had a conversation in 6 months.
Yeah.
They just don't know how to actually sit down and have like a real talk or work their issues out in a more productive way, which, you know, I think tracks for a lot of families.
Yeah.
But the consequences here and the stakes are so much higher.
I agree. And I mean, and I think that it's profound. I was, again, referencing that in that interview I listened to earlier. It's, you know, Emily Carey mentioned the Hightower sigil. And I never thought about the Hightower sigil having a flame at the top of it. And she was talking about it from the standpoint that there's like, you know, they have a fire inside of them, the Hightowers, you know, just as much as other people, other houses. But I kind of thought about it as like, here's this like symbol of like, you know, they talk about pride coming before the fall. And here is like, you know, this symbol of like, you know, in this world of, you know, before King's Landing, biggest city, high, you know, like was like prominent in the realm. And it's this high tower with a flame on top of it. And to me, when I was thinking about that symbol, it's like, okay, here's like the very apex. Here's the symbolism behind it being the apex of the dragon, of fire raining, of all of these things and these houses coming together. But that's really a symbolism also for how high up they go is how far they're going to fall. And it's kind of like that's being foreshadowed, I think, in the people who are being chosen, the houses that are being chosen, the breaking of the dragon. All of these things are like kind of setting us up, because it looks like in this episode, if you're just watching this episode casually, you say, oh, well, this is just a setup episode. But there's so many decisions that were made between episode one and episode two by the end that set up the whole conflict, that is the underpinning and kind of like the scaffolding for all that's to come.
Yeah, I agree. I have nothing to add, except I think you're 100% right. This episode was not just set up. This is not, you know, a filler episode. This was definitely just full of foreshadowing in a way that I really appreciate, because this is how Thrones worked. Mm-hmm. You know, conversations that didn't necessarily seem important became important later. This little conversation between this little girl and the king has a lot of weight to it, but it's, you know, in the context of the episode, it's just a conversation about dragons.
Yeah. And there's weight that we can't even talk about yet. And there's like, in a lot of these conversations, like I'll just say that and mm-hmm. leave it there. But like at us talking offline, I was just like, holy shit. Like there's a lot happening that they're moving on. And it's even like that in the beginning, like some of the people who we meet, there's like things that like this episode in particular, in my opinion, so far had so many different choices, even choices that seem kind of sweet and innocent and not that big a deal, or weighted and whatever, or maybe they seem weird and awkward or gross. All of those fucking choices all play out in the coming conflict in a way that's like, holy shit, that really did matter. When years later, when this all wraps up and you go back and rewatch House of the Dragon, this episode, you'll be like, with the knowledge of how it ended, you'll be like, holy shit, there was a lot happening in this episode. So.
Yeah. That said, there's just like a couple small things I wanted to mention mm-hmm. before we wrap up. One was that the conversation between Corlys and Daemon at the end of this episode, wow, like two extremely wealthy people feeling aggrieved. We are the second sons. Sir, why don't you go sit down? Like, you are one of the wealthiest men in all of Westeros. Yes, you're feeling aggrieved because your daughter didn't get chosen. But I was like, it gave me very much Prince Philip vibes from the Crown. Like, this was a conversation that I definitely feel like, you know, Prince Philip would have entertained on the Crown. Like, it just gave me so many vibes. Matt Smith, you're not playing Prince Philip anymore. You don't need to do this. I'm aggrieved, even though I'm one of the wealthiest people.
I love the moment where as much as I love Corlys, I do love the moment when Daemon checks Corlys, when he's like, yo, I can talk about my brother. You cannot. Like, don't do that.
Yeah,
you
know no, I mean? That's a great moment. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah. Like, and Corlys is like a little out of order here, but not that out of order, because he's not wrong. The king is weak and ineffectual, and never the only decision that he's able to make at this point is who he's gonna marry.
Yeah, I mean, he sets him up. I mean, Daemon, to be fair, does set him up, because he goes like, he's never really been good at that. He goes, at what? He goes, being king. So he's like, oh shit, we just gonna talk freely. Okay, cool. Let me let mine out. You know what I mean? Let me get mine
We're
off.
We're doing a
you
little light mean? Treason. No big deal. Yeah. We're just gonna talk shit about the king. Yeah.
And he's like, nah, son.
And I mean, the fact that Corlys feels comfortable approaching Daemon and knows there will be no consequence tells you everything you need to know about Viserys.
Yeah, and I also think it's significant, because there's context here that, you know, show only folks won't have. It'll just look like, oh, well, the Sea Snake just went and met with Daemon because they're both pissed off. It's actually a big switch, because the reason why Corlys in the small council meetings before was like, Daemon should have this and he should be feared, and he gives so much support to Daemon, and Daemon kind of is like, oh, thank you for your support, Corlys, is because there's history of them beefing. Like, this is an unlikely pairing. Like, essentially when the reason the whole small council is called is because Corlys was not having the fact that they were going to basically go over his son's head again. He was readying his ships for a war. And Daemon was like, cool, bro. Like, if you want to do it, let's do it. I'm going to protect my brother's claim and my family. And they were readying for war. And Jaehaerys was like, okay, I know Daemon and I know Corlys. This is going to happen. Let's have a council and let's let the realm decide. So the whole reason for this whole situation is because these two motherfuckers were about to go at it at the sea and in the air. And they gave zero fucks about how it turned out. They were just about to burn it all down. So the fact that they're now sitting here kind of like, yo, this didn't turn out good, even though we didn't fight, is a big, big statement. It's not a small thing.
Yeah. And it is treasonous for them to even be planning incursion into this situation in the Stepstones, yeah. But they're doing it anyway. So I think seeing how Viserys reacts to that should be interesting. Because again, I think there will be another time jump, maybe just a year. But I think this conflict with crab eater would be better. Yeah. You're supposed to eat crabs. With the crab feeder, obviously we're going to see it pretty soon. They spent so much time showing us like the carnage of what's happening at the Stepstones and showing us the actual, who I think is the crab feeder himself. I think we'll, you know, that conflict will get going next week. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out, because at this point, there's nothing that Viserys can say or do to Daemon that will stop him from doing what he wants, because he's just kind of been allowed to do whatever. Only Rhaenyra has got him to rein in this one time, and it was essentially because he was bored of the conflict. Like, meh.
Yeah. And I also,
Caraxes isn't going to be able to eat anybody, so here's your egg. Bye.
I'm done. I'm not going to get to like. I'm not going to. Yeah, exactly. I think he like proved again in that conversation. He loves his family, even though he's pissed at how they're treating him or what they're doing or what's going on. He loves his family, so he's like, yeah, I'll do a little treason, but I'm not going to like hurt them. You know what I mean? Like, I'll do a little like treason when it comes to like breaking the rules. Oh, you told me I can't invade? I'll go invade. I can't go to Dragonstone? I'm going to go to Dragonstone. You know what I mean? Whatever. Like, stuff that's like kind of like, you know, thumbing his nose at them, but not stuff that he feels will ultimately hurt them. And I think that's probably why, in the moment you're alluding to that we haven't really seen yet, but probably why he gets so pissed off when he hears about the match, is because he knows this is going to be undoing of the house. Like, this is huge. He feels it. And this is what he was warning his brother about when he was in the throne room, when he said, you're weak. Everybody, you know, like, I would be there to protect you from yourself. And
real talk, though, if Daemon wanted to seize the crown with all the gold cloaks and a dragon, an adult dragon, he could have
already.
It would maybe only be temporary. Right. Maybe he can only hold the city for a few weeks, but like, he probably could have done it. So all of this, like, Daemon is dangerous stuff doesn't track for me. Cause I'm like, all he's done is gone to the abandoned house seat where he grew up and overstayed his welcome there and taken a dragon egg. Like, there's so much more he could have done with what, a couple thousand gold cloaks?
Exactly. And even Harold Westerling is like when Otto's talking shit on the bridge and all the stuff is going on, he's saying bad shit about him. He's like, that, like, hangs his head like, oh my God, this guy. Like, because the reality of it is exactly what you're saying. Viserys has no dragon. He only rode Beleriand for a short time before he died. He has no dragon. He never claimed another dragon. Just like, you know, like, here's the wild thing. You're the king. They're talking about claiming, they're talking about, hey, why don't you go ahead and marry so that you could signal to the realm that you're strong? How about you go into the fucking dragon pit and claim a fucking dragon? That would be your first order of business. How about you guys stand down? I'm going to go claim a new dragon.
You sound just like a Targaryen right now, because they look down on the folks who don't
have
that.
I'm just saying, it's like he's out here talking about marrying teenagers. Fucking claim a dragon. Like, what is wrong with him?
All right. So the last thing I wanted to talk about is who the dragon riders are, because we have seen this question. I've seen this question a lot on Reddit, in some Facebook groups. I just want to be clear about who we are sure are dragon riders right now. So we know that Daemon and Rhaenyra, we've seen them ride their dragons, which again sounds very sexual, but I mean literally ride a dragon. So we know those two are dragon riders. We know that Viserys used to ride Valyrian because he, you know, has told us as much, which is also true in the book. And we believe Rhaenys also is a dragon rider. And the reason that I think that Rhaenys is because I don't know who else Rhaenyra is talking about when she says, "You have dragon riders, father." Like, we haven't met anyone other than her, and Daemon is obviously not in the mix. So I believe that the other dragon rider she's talking about is Rhaenys.
Yeah, it'd probably be Rhaenys, Rhaenyra, Daemon, and then possibly Rhaenys' children, right? But maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should assume that Rhaenys' children have the ability to ride dragons when they're old enough, because not all Targaryens ride when they're young. Some of them, it's like when they're, you know, as soon as they can walk, they take to the skies. Others, it's when they're teenagers. Like, I think we should assume that at some point, Laena and Lenor will both be dragon riders. And I think that's all we have for right now.
Yeah, I think right now that's what it is. Right, but we also know that there's another dragon on the board that we haven't seen yet, which is Dreamfire. Like,
there's two.
Well, there's
because Dreamfire is obviously still alive, laying eggs. We haven't seen her yet.
And Vhagar.
Vhagar, who is also a female dragon, and I think also it's, you know, in the lore, has laid eggs. So we have two dragons we have not seen yet that have been mentioned. So I am hyped to see Vhagar. Dreamfire has always been one of my favorite just because of her name. But I actually really just want to see this huge dragon, because right now Caraxes looks enormous. Yeah. But Vhagar is supposedly twice his size.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love that we've cleared that up, because I think it is important to keep, because there's going to be lots of dragons, lots of dragon riders. I do love that they've made them very distinct. You can see, I know the bloodworm from Cyrax. Like, I tell the difference. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Yeah, it's so funny, because I actually thought that I couldn't tell a size difference in the first episode, because you don't see them together. But seeing Cyrax come out of the fog,
she's much smaller. Yeah,
100%, than Caraxes.
100%.
Like, much smaller. Yeah. She looks like a baby. So I was just like, oof, oh no, Rhaenyra. Although sometimes younger, smaller dragons give you an advantage because they are faster. But I was just, I had so much anxiety for Rhaenyra until, you know, Caraxes was like,
yeah,
hey buddy,
yeah,
what you doing here,
man? So the one last thing I want to mention is there are two very intimate scenes in both episodes where the backdrops are very, very, I think, intentional, and the backdrops are the old gods and the new, and those scenes are with Rhaenyra and Alicent. Like, you know, we have the whole Weretree and in the first episode, and then this time we're in the Sept and they're praying to the Seven, and Alicent is talking about how she does and connects to her mom through this, and Rhaenyra isn't really a very prayerful person. Could be because of what they said, you know, the Targaryens are people believe are closest to gods. So maybe she's not used to it, but she does show a lot of emotion in that moment of connecting. There's a tender moment there. And I just find that there's like this interesting emotion, like these interesting moments that they're having, where you're seeing their personalities and they're being vulnerable with each other, or you're seeing kind of like their closeness, and they're always seem to be in the backdrop of the spiritual practices of the realm. And I think because of Allison being from Old Town, where, you know, people study a lot of the realm's history and also the religions, that's where you go to become a maester, as we found out with Sam going. It's very interesting to me that that's happening.
It's also where the Grand Septon is.
Exactly. So I think that's very interesting that they keep having these moments with these religious backdrops.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really noticed that. But I think you have a point. It was interesting to see them praying to the seven.
Yeah.
I think that's something to definitely keep an eye on, is the religious imagery of the world.
Because
sure.
She asked her a very interesting question. She said she's trying to get her to pray and do the same practice. I'd like it if you did this to, like, you know, get in touch with your mom like I do with mine. And she says, if not for me, then them. And when she says the them, she's referring to the seven. But Rhaenyra's not really like, she's like, you see, her eyes are open. She's struggling to do it. It's like, so that's a clear signaling to me that Allison is very, very religious.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I'll be interested to see if Allison remains religious, but let's see what happens next week.
All right. Well, I guess before we wrap up, we did want to, you know, we got some people who listen to our pod that are just here for the first time for the House of Dragon stuff. If you haven't, check out our Atla coverage. And we wanted to give a little, because if you're an Atla fan, we covered that show as well. And we wanted to give a little love to another pod that is covering Atla from a unique angle. You want to talk to them a little bit about it, Andrea?
Yeah. So there's a new podcast that's coming out on Labor Day called Bending Towards Justice, Avatar, The Last Airbender for the Global Majority. It is a podcast that's going to focus largely on looking at the show through a social justice and the lens of people of color. So I think it should be interesting. I think there's a lot, you know, to unpack with Atla, because obviously the other characters are people of color, but the creators are not. So I think there will be some interesting conversations there. And their format is going to be to bring on activists and experts each week to kind of unpack the themes on the show. So I think it will be interesting. I will definitely be giving it a listen. And again, it's called Bending Towards Justice, Avatar, The Last Airbender for the Global Majority.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to check that out too. So with that said, here we go. Another week in the books. Exciting. Go and leave a review anywhere you listen to pods. Go ahead and hit us up, Kin Folklore Pod on Instagram, Kin Folklore Pod on Twitter. You can go ahead and follow us there. And you can also join our Facebook group. Or if you got questions, feedback, ideas, things you want to talk about with the episode, hit us up at kinfolklore@gmail.com. Maybe your questions or thoughts can make it into the pod. And yeah, that is going to do it for us this week. See you next time.
Bye, everyone.